Fanfic Writers Craft is a podcast that discusses all things fanfiction with a focus on the art and science of writing for the enjoyment of fan communities. My name is Jo, aka Bubbly Sound, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. My co-host, Nani, writes online under the name Copperdust. You'll meet her shortly. In this episode, we delve into the use of time in narrative, focusing on techniques such as flashbacks, foreshadowing, and non-linear storytelling. Nani discusses her approach to incorporating time in her fanfiction, emphasizing the importance of moments of emotional intensity. We explore the use of non-linear narrative structures, discussing how we can enhance character development and mirror immersive thinking. We also share strategies for handling transitions and overcoming challenges when incorporating time-related elements into fanfiction. We hope you enjoy, but for now, buckle up. Get yourself a nice cup of tea, and welcome to Fanfic Writers Craft. Hello, and welcome to the Fanfic Writers Craft. This is Jo. I hope you're all doing well. It is April. Welcome. We're back, Lenny and I. How are you, Lenny? How's things?
I'm good in the sense that I had a vacation, and now I'm back. I'm bad in the sense that this has been like an extremely germy year for me, and I keep getting sick over and over again, and every time it goes away, there's another thing. And at this point, I'm afraid to tell people I'm sick because I'm afraid they're going to think I'm faking it, but like, it's honestly happening again.
Gosh.
They will not stop with the bacteria.
Do you think it's like the school and the kids, or?
I think maybe my immune system is a little run down, or maybe I'm just getting older, but It's been relentless this year.
Yeah, I mean, at least, like, spring is coming. I'm getting a lot of, like, allergies and stuff in the spring, so I'm not looking forward to that. But yeah, I've had, like, a horrible month. So I'm really exhausted. Like, I had such a fun time when I was in Florida, and then everything went to shit. So yeah, but I'm hoping that April will serve me better, that I can write a little bit more and like get back on track and just kind of feel a little bit creative again, because I've just had like a really bad, well, a very taxing, like, professional month, and then a very bad personal month.
Oh, that sucks.
So it's just been a lot. But yeah, looking forward to, at least the one thing I will say is the days are a lot longer here in Ireland, and my, like, brain is finally coping with the fact that, oh my god, it's not winter anymore. But yeah, let's just say that I'm happy to leave March 2024 behind.
Yeah, I feel like I'm finally getting to the point in my classroom where I've like set expectations in place strong enough that I could look away from them for 30 seconds and not have them set something on fire. Like the other day, keep in mind, I've been with them since day one in September. And the other day we went downstairs for an assembly, and they actually like held the door open for each other as they passed into and out of the stairwell. And it was like a huge deal. I wanted to cry because I've been pushing the hold the doors open thing so hard all year, and it's taken 7 months, and they're finally holding the doors open as they go down the stairs.
Wow. Wow. Incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Before we start the episode, I was curious, have you seen what's happened with Wattpad?
No, I've been a little busy noticing what's been happening with, you know, the Middle East and also Ukraine and now Iran being involved and the Houthi pirates, but apparently something's happening with Wattpad. That's almost as bad.
I thought I was going to go lighter than all the things you've mentioned. But yeah, so I just wanted to bring this up because this is kind of fanfiction related, and it's also related to the episode that I recorded with one of our guests last year about Wattpad. But basically, there's been another Wattpad purge where they seem to have gotten some sort of AI involved into like the leading hundreds of works that had either not safe for work content or like content that was involving minors, and they've also upped the age of like consent within the Wattpad
community to 18 rather than 16.
When you say the age of consent, you mean the age for a fictional character to consent to another fictional character.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
And so a lot of people have, like, gotten their works deleted, both fanfic and original fiction, because there's a massive, like, original fiction in the Wattpad community. Like, Wattpad is primarily for original fiction. And so a lot of people are complaining on Reddit about what happened and also sort of trying to figure out if they want to move to AO3. And I'm reading a lot of, like, and I completely understand a lot of people, especially people who write original fiction, being concerned about, like, not knowing how to use AO3, especially for original fiction. You know, it's like kind of, it's kind of niche.
It's not really for that.
Yeah, it's not really for that. So they don't really have a home, I guess. But yeah, and I've been seeing, like, a lot of posts on Tumblr about, like, you know, for people to convert to AO3 and, like, the etiquette of AO3 and, like, tagging and all those things. And I don't know. I feel like people are being a bit condescending and mean towards Wattpad people and, like, being like, okay, well, this is the etiquette of AO3 and, like, this is what you should or shouldn't do. And it's kind of like, relax, you know, people, it'll self-police at the end of the day and people will learn if they do want to switch to AO3. Obviously, like, the reason why Wattpad is doing this, and I think that's one of the things that people are missing sometimes, is that it's not Wattpad themselves that are doing this, it's their advertisers. Like, it's in order to advertise, a lot of advertisers, like, because Wattpad is monetized, so they monetize an advertisement, and a lot of the advertisement don't want to be...
Yeah, and they're like, Procter & Gamble doesn't want to associate Lysol with...
Basically...
You know, demonic,
like, vampire incestuous, basically
primeval sludge board.
So, so it's kind of sad. Like, the same thing happened on FFNet in, like, what was it, 2010, 2011?
Who here remembers Strike Through from 2007?
I do not.
On LiveJournal. Okay, so that was, like, the original version of this, because LiveJournal, it was, like, either when they sold it to the Russians or when they were getting ready to sell LiveJournal, they cracked down on a lot of content that it wasn't, like, general sexual content. It was stuff that would be, let's say, depicting things in fiction that if you did it in real life would definitely be illegal. That sort of content. And a lot of people were really upset about it. And a lot of other people were like, you know... I don't know if there's a whole lot of artistic merit to defending your bestiality, smut. I felt for authors who were seeing everything they had written being taken down and all their followers deleted overnight. I mean, not followers, but, you know, it was friends lists at the time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, some of the stuff you guys have written is real hard to defend.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that people were sort of saying is, like, apparently the Wattpad crowd are very, like, the stuff that is on Wattpad, because of their terms and conditions and already pre-purge, was a lot, like, softer than what you would find on AO3, and so there's a lot of concerns from, like, AO3 users that Wattpad users now migrating to AO3 are going to run a, like, morality checklist on all the fics in AO3, being like, you can't write XYZ because it's immoral.
Whoa. So people kicked off of Wattpad because they were too inappropriate are then going to come to Tumblr and decide that they want to be the inappropriate police?
Yeah, that's the fear. Well, that's one of the fears that I've seen from...
But weren't they just kicked off for being inappropriate, so wouldn't they be pro-free speech?
See, I don't know. Like, that, you're being too logical about this. I don't know. But that's one of the concerns that I've seen people having. But I don't, like, as I said, I think people are being too overly cautious about this. Like, I think it's gonna self-police and iron out in and of itself. I do feel sorry. I feel like, you know, you go on as well, like, you go on and you post your fanfic on Wattpad, and, like, that's kind of a risk that you're taking, and you know of AO3. I do feel sorry for the people who write original fiction, because AO3 isn't really catered for that. So it's kind of like, where do these people go? Unless they want to publish, but maybe that's just not what they want to do. Like, maybe they just want to do it for fun.
I'm kind of wondering what it is that these people wrote that got them kicked off.
I don't think it's, like, anything necessarily bad. I think it's just because Wattpad was involving an AI in it, so it was very, like, sort of if you had certain keywords or if you had certain content. But from what I've seen, it's, like, basically smut. But it's not, because sexual content isn't really allowed on Wattpad. But it's not, like, it doesn't seem to be anything particularly hardcore or anything like that.
Well, I'm not really familiar with Wattpad. I mean, I do know that there was... I had a grade 8 student last year who told me she wrote romance stories and published them on Wattpad, and as soon as she said it, another girl was like, oh my god, you can't just admit to that.
Well, I mean, I hope
she's since gotten, you know, there's like author deals where like these companies will troll TikTok and Wattpad for like the most popular romance writers and then give them a real book deal. I hope she's gotten one since then.
I'm hoping as well. But anyway, if you were one of the Wattpad users or if you've seen this going on, please feel free to Anon or message us if you have anything to say about it. And yeah, I think personally, you know, probably AO3 is safer. But as I said in the episode that we recorded about Wattpad, I also think that you just need to be careful not to put all your eggs in one basket. Like right now, AO3 is great, but you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And I think, you know, if you're building a community, like relying only on one medium is just not really the way to go, in my opinion. So, yeah.
I mean, where do you post your work other than AO3?
I post on FFNet. I have some stuff on that's cross-posted on Tumblr as well, like little one-shots and stuff.
I gave up on FFNet because I found it was so buggy, it was so annoying trying to update a chapter, and I was getting so little readership from there compared to AO3 that I just gave up.
Yeah.
And now and then, I'll have somebody go on FFNet and leave me a comment like, when are you going to update this fic? And they don't know that, like, it's on AO3 and it's already done. Like, all the updates have already been posted. They just didn't bother checking.
Fair. No, but yeah, I'm not updating on FFNet anymore for, like, new stories. So, like, if I write one-shots now, I post them exclusively on AO3. But Castles, I'm still updating on FFNet because I started it on FFNet, so it makes no sense to me to like stop. But yeah, I wish another website would come along, but it is what it is. I personally don't really like over relying on AO3, which is why even if I don't necessarily post, I still have a pretty big like Tumblr and Discord presence because I kind of like having different things going on and not only relying on like one website. Anyway, so today we thought we'd tackle a topic that was highly requested. It was one of the most highly requested when we did our little poll last year, and I was very excited to talk about it because I think it's something that is very interesting to me, and that's the use of time in narrative. So we're going to be exploring topics like flashback, foreshadowing, non-linear narratives, and all those things. And I think it's going to be a super interesting discussion. And so, Lani, I was wondering, sort of to open up the discussion, how do you approach the use of time in your fanfic, and why is it important to you?
So I think in previous episodes, we've discussed time periods and creating a setting that's from a specific historical time period. So I'm going to not talk about that much today, and I'm going to mostly just discuss time in terms of like elapsed time over the course of a story. So in my writing, generally speaking, in like within one story, there's not a lot of time that elapses over the course of that story. Like most of them are set over the course of a few days or a few weeks, with some exceptions. But I often will have like, maybe you could call it a flash forward or an epilogue that's sort of interwoven into the story where I'll show what happened, you know, many years later. That's something that I did with the Atoners, and then where the epilogue is sort of woven through the story, and with the scene between the epilogue is just at the end, but there's a few different epilogue scenes that are set years apart from each other. I think that for me, I'm maybe not as much showing the passage of time rather than showing one specific moment and how your life feels in that particular moment. So I'm sort of, I like a kind of, it's like a still frame on time, right? One particular moment. So like, I get a lot of comments on the scene between saying things like, you know, from, I guess, older readers who are like, you know, I remember that summer and that's exactly how that felt. And they feel like, you know, it's just a snapshot of like one moment in time. You know, it's not the story of a person's whole life, but it's the story of how it feels in that moment. Mm. And I guess I would say also the other way in which I address time is like how it relates to the human lifespan and especially childhood and adolescence and kind of like milestones.
Yeah.
So I think that there's some times where I like to relate something that's happening to like a milestone. So for example, in March Hare, there's this one moment where Hermione reflects that, or like the day she got her first period, Harry lost his last baby tooth, because to me, that's a way of talking about these two things that we usually think of as happening several years apart in childhood, but they could overlap in a way, and kind of the different associations with those two like biological milestones.
I think I like the idea of using time as a snapshot and just kind of showing a particular era in someone's life. And I like the example that you gave of like the first period and the last baby tooth, because you would think like one of them is very childish and one of them is very like adolescent. And yet, you know, as you said, like those two things really overlap or could overlap. So I think that's very interesting. I think to me, I think the use of time is something that I think about a lot in terms of story building and in terms of like, how am I going to tell this story? Usually when I have the story to tell, it's not necessarily about a period of someone's life, is more like a narrative arc, like I want character A to go through X, Y, Z. And so I think the way I think about time is more about like, okay, how am I going to build this story that I want to tell within a time frame, and how am I going to tell it, and in what order am I going to tell these things? So I think that's kind of what I think about.
Would you say that you change your mind when you're mapping out a story of like, no, I still want this to happen, but I want readers to find out about it earlier, or no, I want to move this to be later in the narration, even if it's still earlier in the like story of the actual characters?
Oh, all the time. All the time. Like, I move things around, because the thing that I was going to say is like, I don't think I've written a story that was completely told in a linear manner in years, to be honest. So I'm always sort of moving, and that was one of the pieces of advice that I've always kept in my head that was given by another writer, which was usually like, if your story's not working, if something's not working, it's because it's not the right time to say it. Like, either if your beginning isn't working, it's because you're not starting at the right moment, like in the right scene, or if you're trying to write a chapter and this one like particular scene isn't working, it's maybe because it's not positioned in the right moment within the chapter. And so I always kind of run with that and build my stories around that. So I'm always kind of moving things around and being like, okay, if that doesn't work, then maybe if that doesn't work there, then maybe it should like be told sooner or told later. Which doesn't necessarily mean that it happens sooner or later, like within the world of the story. It's just, I will move it ahead in the narrative, even if it's like a flash forward or a flashback or whatever. So yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I think about a lot. So I was wondering, is like, have you ever written, like kind of piggybacking off of that, is like, have you ever written something that's like in a non-linear narrative, and what do you think that kind of storytelling works for or works against, and like what's kind of the draw, like the advantages and disadvantages of that kind of thing.
I'm probably a lot more linear than you in terms of how I work with time, but I think maybe the most non-linear narrative that I've written recently, like not, I did some like really experimental stuff like when I was a kid that I don't really talk about anymore, but of the things I've written more recently, probably Check the Spindle, which is, I don't really want to explain in what way it's nonlinear because I don't want to give away the ending, although I think we're at a point in the story where people are starting to figure it out, but I don't think they've figured it out completely. I would say that it's tough because I'm using it in a sort of mystery sense, and it's very hard to know. You want to lay out the clues so that people gradually figure it out, but you don't want them feeling like, okay, nothing makes sense, none of this goes together, and you also don't want them to figure it out right away and then know too much for too long. So just knowing how much is enough to give people is hard. I often use the comments that I get as a way to help me stay on track of knowing, like, am I giving them just enough but not too much?
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. And I think, like, the sort of non-linear narrative works really well in mystery. Like, I've seen it done, and I'm not even talking about fan fiction. Like, it's a very usual sort of staple of like mystery novels and like whodunits and stuff. I'm thinking there's one book that does it really well that also does it with like alternative POVs, which is He Said, She Said by, I can't remember her name, but I will find it and put it in the show notes.
Erin Kelly. Her name is Erin Kelly.
Like, it's this story of a crime that happens and the sort of point of view of two of the witnesses that witnessed the crime, but also there's like a past narrative of what led to the crime and like a future narrative of the aftermath of the trial. And it's just like done very cleverly. So I think it's one of those things that works really well in mystery, like to build mystery, because as you've said, it's very much about giving the reader just enough to like have a little bit of curiosity and suspense without saying too much. So yeah, I think like for mystery, it works really well. The reason why I'm doing it in castles is just, I don't think it was really a decision that I took. Like, I didn't wake up and be like, okay, the style of castles is going to be like this, because the style of castles is very particular because it's full of flashbacks, but it's very much integrated in the story and it kind of feels like one big narration, but it keeps jumping forward and back, and everything is present tense as well, so there's no like really tense signaling. But yeah, I think the reason why I did it is that it just, it kind of fits with the, at least to me, the way that I wanted to tell the story, which is very immersive and very like within the head of one character. And I think, you know, a lot of the time, like if you're in your head, you're kind of thinking about one thing and then you're thinking about another and then you're thinking about something that happened. And so that's kind of the way that I ended up writing it. And that's what works for the story. But again, I've written before, like my previous long work was doing the usual thing of like having two timelines that are told at the same time. And like, you kind of have to parse out, you know, both to kind of make up the story, which is more usual, I guess. But yeah, like I think it works for a lot of things, but I think it's definitely helpful if you're wanting to create curiosity or suspense or like trying to hide something from your reader. I think for castles as well, the reason I had it like this is that because it's a canon compliance story, and but because it happens, so it happens after the war, but before, most of it happens after the war, but before the epilogue, I couldn't really have like suspense in terms of like a lot of the things that happen in the epilogue, because everyone has read the epilogue and everyone knows that's what's going to happen. So I felt more comfortable acknowledging that within the story and being like, okay, well, that's not where I'm going to build the intrigue, because everyone knows that Harry ends up with Ginny. Like, so it was easier to sort of go in text, acknowledging the fact that we know how it ends, but kind of showing the how, which I think is also something that works if you're trying to build something like that.
Yeah, I definitely felt like when I'm working on Merryman, I have said to myself, like, you know, because this is an AU, but it's based on existing characters, like, it's not a surprise who's going to die. And even if you weren't familiar with these characters, because, I don't know, let's say you were that random person who left me a comment that was like, I don't like the source material, but I like this story. Like, if for some reason you weren't familiar with these characters, I think you would still be able to tell who was going to die based on the fact that, like, I'm not really trying to hide it. But I was like, that's not what you go into this story asking the question. You don't go in asking, well, who's going to die? It's more like, how does it happen along the way and what does it feel like? But it's not a secret that the character who seems like they're going to die, like, of course they're going to die.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm, like, I think that's what I was coming up against in Castles, is like, yeah, everyone's read the epilogue, everyone knows how the story ends. Well, it ends after the epilogue, but everyone knows that, like, you know, they have three kids and, like, all the kind of
thing. And that scene happens.
And that scene happens. So it's kind of like, I needed to acknowledge that scene. And I got a comment, I got a comment once that was like, because obviously Harry for a while is dating someone else, right, in Castles.
Was this person having a mental breakdown over, like...
No, they were not, but they were like, oh, I wish you wouldn't do the flash forwarding, because there's one scene where, like, Harry's, like, acknowledges the fact that he is going to break up with... like Mia eventually, because, you know, that's the story and it's kind of in narrative. It's one of those flash forwardy things. And this person was like, oh, I wish you wouldn't do the flash forward things, because I wish, like, you'd maintain suspense as to whether Harry was going to end up with Ginny or Mia. And I was like, but there was no epilogue. Like, I told you it was canon compliant. There's no suspense in that. Like, of course, and that's why I'm doing it like this. It's that, like, there's no... There, like, it was never going to be Mia, and that's, like, you're told that from the start, because that's how the story is built, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to define for yourself also, like, what is the nature of the nonlinear storytelling, because it's not always done for the purpose of telling a mystery story. There's other purposes to it, right? Sometimes you're doing it for an emotional effect. Sometimes you're doing it because you're juxtaposing two stories set in different time periods, but wanting to draw a thematic connection. Sometimes you're doing it because you want to give people a sense of, you know, what they need to pay attention to in the present narrative, because they're looking for clues as to how the future turned out to be the way it is. So I think it doesn't always have to be done in a mysterious sense.
Is there anything, any piece of fanfic that you think does this well?
Yes. I know you're gonna laugh at me, because it's just like the same author again and again and again. Guys, like, I promise I've tried other things, but I'm gonna say it again. The story Seven Simple Machines, by Fluorescent Gray, I think does nonlinear time but also nonlinear everything else really effectively. And, you know, at first, when you read, like, the first two chapters, you may be like, what's going on here? But by the time you get a few chapters in, you start to realize what's going on here and why it looks the way it does. And I think it's just done really effectively and for, you know, to make a specific point. But also, it keeps the story feeling very fresh, and you don't get bored of it, because each chapter is really brand new.
There's one, I'm sure I've recommended it before, because it's one of my favorite stories as well, but Maps to the Stars Homes by Lisby is, it's kind of, so it is an AU, because it's a post-war AU in the way that it was written before Deathly Hallows came out, but it's surprisingly accurate, given that this person wrote this before Deathly Hallows came out. But it's basically this sort of post-war AU where Harry goes traveling, but the way it's written is completely mm-hmm. out of order. And she, like, the author numerated mm-hmm. the scenes, so there's numbers. If you really wanted to, like, know what the order of the scenes are, there are numbers, but I find the numbers almost unnecessary, and I think she's really good at, like, just putting the scenes in an order that is confusing, and yet a little bit like you were talking about, after a while you kind of start understanding what is going on, and you kind of start being like, oh yeah, and like replacing it in its context. And I think that's also a lot of fun mm-hmm. for the reader. Like yeah. personally, I love that because it kind of keeps you engaged as well. Like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think when these stories are done super well, it's like really fun to try and piece it together, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I have a question for you. So outside of the world of fan fiction, what it could be a movie, a play, a TV show, a book, anything, what is your absolute favorite use of a nonlinear narrative that's been just done so well?
I'm not sure. I would be tempted to say He Said, She Said, but that's just because that's the one that's coming to my brain right now. I'm sure after this episode, I'm gonna think of something else. But yeah, I'm just gonna say that. What about you?
This is probably more of a traditionalist answer, but I think that both Christopher Nolan movies, Inception and Memento, use the non-linear use of time in the most sort of like astonishing way. Memento was very hard to follow, but in a way that felt intentional. You definitely had to pay attention during that movie to know what was going on, because it's told from the perspective of somebody who has, what's it called, anterograde amnesia, which is the less common kind. It's the kind where you retain your long-term memories, but you lose the ability to form new memories. So people with anterograde amnesia constantly live in a world that sort of refreshes itself roughly every 5 to 10 minutes, because they... And so they constantly feel like they're just waking up. And he does such a really effective use of time by telling the story backwards in increments of forward sections that are only about 5 minutes long. So roughly every 5 minutes you find yourself once again in a context where you don't understand what's going on, and you're trying to understand, like, wait, what happened before / after this that makes this make sense? And so it's really effective. With Inception, it's more like the story is told in the right order, but the way he plays with time and the way you perceive time in a dream is really, really interesting.
I think, so I haven't seen Memento, and I'm like the 5% of people who didn't like Inception. But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't really relate to the theme or like to the sort of dream like sequences or whatever, but I felt it was a little bit too much. Like, I didn't relate to it. I thought it was a bit overdone. But yeah, I don't know. I know I'm like the 5% of people who didn't like Inception, so I respect it. So how do you handle transitions then between different time periods in your fan fiction, and, you know, to maintain sort of a engaging flow, and if you're transitioning between different scenes or time periods in your stories?
So I would talk about, like, what's the difference between like a scene break versus just a transition. So we know a scene break involves, like, you come to the end of a paragraph, and then there's usually like a larger blank space or sometimes a line on the page before the next section starts. Whereas a transition is when you move from one place in time to another place in time that is later, without showing the character in the interim, for example, riding home or doing all the things they did in the days that passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, why would you choose one over the other? I would say that when you're doing a scene break, it's because you want your next scene to, you want to draw attention to the beginning of the next scene by sort of plunging people into it. Whereas when you do like a verbal time transition without breaking the scene, you're kind of presenting more mm-hmm. continuity and allowing the reader to sort of more gradually approach the main idea of the next scene. I would say that as I've gotten older, I've become more interested in doing gradual transitions without doing scene breaks, because I think when I was younger, I just felt like I did what I saw everybody doing, which is just breaking and then starting again later, and you know, that's a little bit easier. And then I wanted to sort of gradually learn how to do the transition verbally without kind of breaking the scene. I would say that it depends how much time is passing in the gap. If you're passing like 10 years, you need like a whole chapter break, not just a scene break. Like you need a chapter break, maybe even a section break. If you're passing a few days, in some cases a few months, you could do a verbal transition. I would think about the difference between falling asleep and gradually falling asleep and having dreams and then waking up the next morning feeling well rested versus being anesthetized and going from, you know, counting down numbers to somebody telling you you can stop counting, the surgery's over, and being like, wait, what? So I would say that the scene break is for when you're anesthetized, and the verbal transition is for when you're, you know, gradually falling asleep. So I'll often do a scene break if I'm switching to a different character's perspective, whereas I'll do a verbal transition if I'm continuing with that person's perspective, but time does just need to pass.
Yeah, I think, like, I kind of like both in different ways. I've done, and I really enjoy doing the aggressive scene break thing, you know, that we did in like the 2010s, where it was like you would write like one line and then have a scene break and then another little scene. I've done it in the Fulton Fulton Manufacturing recently, like SEMA recently, and I've also done it in Suntory de Caillou, and I love it as like a fun exercise. Like I just think it's a fun way to tell stories, and there's a nostalgic element to it for me, because that's like the old school sort of fan fiction that I was reading when I was like a teenager, like in my early 20s. It's funny you say like you need a chapter break if you're going to skip ahead like 10 years, because I've definitely done maybe not 10 years, but at least like 2-3 years without a chapter break in Castles. But I think that's just because Castles is written in such a way that it's doable. But yeah, with Castles, like I've talked about it before, but I kind of wanted to set myself the challenge to not ever use scene breaks. But that's more because I wanted to work on my transition skills. It's not that I'm like allergic to scene breaks and think they're evil. It's just that like for that particular story, that was one of the challenges that I set for myself, is like, I don't want to use a single scene break. And it's kind of become a staple of it now. But I think, yeah, generally you're correct. If you're like changing character's perspective or changing between your timeline as well, like if you're talking, if you're telling a story on different timelines, scene breaks can be very useful. It's just, yeah, it's about, I think it's just about dosing and like using them sporadically in order to really, as you said, you know, kind of accentuate whatever you want to accentuate. So if you want to give this idea of continuity and a story that is being told without break, then you need to use them more sporadically than if you want to like maybe draw attention to either the beginning of a scene or the end of the scene. Then that might be when you would use a scene break. But I'm not like, what I mean is I'm not allergic to them. I don't think they're evil. It's just something that I've been trying to work on when in recent stories.
I think for me, the time when I don't like scene breaks is when, you know, the purpose of a scene break is that the stuff in the interim is not important or interesting, which is why you're not including it. But I don't like a scene break when the stuff in the interim, or a transition, where the stuff in the interim seems like it was important and interesting and the writer is not including it. So I'll give you an example of a type of, this is something you'll see in like movies a lot, is like the training montage when they want to show how somebody becomes good at something. And they'll give you maybe 60 to 90 seconds of music playing while you see them, you know, running upstairs or practicing the violin or whatever else it is that they need to become good at. The assumption being that how they become good at something is not really interesting, which is why they only need to show you a 60-second montage of the practice. Whereas for me, it's like, no, I think that is interesting, and that's why I don't want to just see a montage. So I guess it's like, it's really about asking yourself, am I skipping over the good stuff, or am I skipping over the stuff that nobody wanted to see anyways?
Yeah, and I think one other thing that I wanted to add is, you know, I think there's also ways you can signal change of scenes or change of timeline, for instance, like if you're writing on two different timelines. And, you know, a lot of people will do italics for flashbacks, or, you know, to signpost, or like they will signpost with like the date at which something happens. I try not to do that anymore. I think that's something that I used to do when I was younger. I just think it kind of breaks the narrative too much for me now.
And there's always ways to cheat, right? So like, instead of saying April 15th, 1997, you can have somebody reading a newspaper and an event happens that dates back to that time. Or, you know, instead of saying 3 months later, you can show that in the previous scene, they were outside walking and there was snow on the ground. And now they're outside walking and there's cherry blossoms on the ground. Right. So you can indicate these things in a sensory way, referencing, you know, the seasons of the year or events that happen without having to explicitly say, you know, 3 months passed. And then, like, never say that time passed, because of course time passes.
No,
I disagree with that. Time does pass, which is why it's not necessary to say. Instead of saying time passed or 6 months passed or 10 years passed, mention some of the things that happened or changed along the way.
I agree. So, okay, I agree with that. I think it's better if you give a sense of specificity. However, I do think sometimes I would rather someone say in a story, you know, maybe something, they're talking about something that happened in year one, and then they're like, in year two, I did XYZ. I would rather signposting like this, very obvious, or like 3 months past, rather than them try to be very flowery about it and kind of like, you know, easing, like the leaves fell into the ground. And like,
I think that's about avoiding cliches, though, because there's always a boring way and a more original way. Like, yes, if you say 3 months passed, you know, the snow melted, the flowers grew back, you know, the children started playing outside again, like, the problem is not that you're signposting. The problem is that you're signposting with cliches.
Yeah.
Right?
So, whereas,
if you signpost with more original signposts, like, it doesn't suck.
Yeah. But I think there is merit to obviousness and to just, you know, saying in December or like on XYZ date, rather than trying to be too obvious about it. Like, if you can't think of something, don't go with the cliche, just like say the things as you want to say them and move on. And I think one other thing that I wanted to say is, if you're like me and you're interested in telling stories in with non-linear narratives, or you know, kind of telling like with flashbacks or flash forwards, tense is your friend. Use of tense, think about your use of tense. That's why I write present tense, is that it's easier to go into the past and into the future if your main narrative is in present tense, rather than if you're already in the past, it's harder to go into the past of the past in terms of like using tense and stuff. Like you have less moving room. So I think about your tenses, think about your tense use. And if, at least if that's something that is interesting to you, because I think that is one of the tricks that, you know, something, if you're telling a story present tense, and then you're telling within that story an anecdote that is past tense, it happened in the past, and that's it. You don't need to signpost, you don't need to transition, it's just in the past. So I think that might be something that could be useful if you're looking to do that.
Yeah, I would also say that when, there's something else I wanted to bring up, which is the language that people use to refer to time, right? So you mentioned something like, on December 15th, this happened, or in December, this happened. And I think, you know, it matters to the type of story you're telling. Like, are you going to say roughly the month that something happened? Are you going to give the precise date that it happened? Oh, are you going to give a rough year that it happened? Are you going to reference when it happened according to a holiday? Like on Christmas, he said this or that. Like, I think it matters because it's relevant to who your characters are and what they're doing. So, for example, when I was writing Merry Men, there was this, I had this line where a character was saying something like, someone was asking how long somebody else had been there, and the other person was going to say, around 9 months. And then I stopped myself and I went, okay, like, I know that in normal people world, if you asked how long somebody was at their job, they would say something like that. But, like, in Vietnam, people counted down the individual days until they could leave, and it was like a big deal and a huge kind of psychological boost to know that you didn't have a lot of days left. So somebody who had been there for 9 months would not say 9 months. They would say exactly how many days they had been there.
Yeah.
Because that was relevant to them. And similarly, like, most people, if you ask how old their kids are, they'll say, you know, they're 8 and 10. But if you ask somebody who has a baby, they might say, you know, she's 13 weeks. Or something, where you're like, nobody with a 30-year-old kid is going to tell you their kid's age in weeks. So it's just relevant to, like, in different contexts, people will talk about time differently, and people will be more or less specific based on what kind of thing you're saying. And, like, certainly, you know, in my world, we'll refer to things as, like, report card season, or, like, parent-teacher interview season, you know, or things like that, where it's, like, obviously outside of our world, people don't refer to those times of year that way. But it's just like, what world do your characters live in, and how do they refer to time?
Yeah, and I think also that can change. Like, I know that there are certain chapters of Castles that are happening within one day. Like, there's chapter 6 specifically that happens within one day. And so in that chapter, the time of day becomes relevant, because within the time capsule of that chapter, you know, because the time that the chapter is set in is so small, then time of day and, like, whether it's noon, whether it's 2 in the afternoon, whether it's, like, 6 in the evening becomes relevant, because on the scale of one day, that's how you tell time. Whereas for something like chapter 21, which happened over, like, 14 years, I'm not going to have fun and, like, tell you what day exactly and what time it was, unless it's, like, absolutely really relevant, because that's over a span of 14 years. Like, if you're on scale for 14 years, that isn't really relevant. Even the seasons aren't really relevant. It's like, in X year it happened, or, like, when the kids, even, like, if you're talking about kids, it's going to be, like, when they were little or when they were older. Like, that could be even your scale. So also look at what the scale of your story is, either within your chapter or within the story as a whole, to kind of know what language you need to use. I'm wondering, kind of as a last question, what do you think is the hardest thing in terms of use of time in narrative, and what do you struggle with? Like, what do you think is the sort of challenge that a lot of people have?
I don't think there's one single challenge. I think each writer has, like, their own personal challenge that they struggle with. I think for me, I've said this before, but once the main purpose or idea of a scene has already occurred, I sometimes struggle with, like, bringing the scene to a close and ending it when, you know, what's been established has already been established. Because if you keep going long past the point at which the important part happened, you're gonna slow down the pace and start boring people, and people don't like reading filler. But at the same time, I don't wanna, every time someone says the important thing, I don't wanna immediately have, like, a cliffhanger page break there. I would say the thing that's hard is knowing how much time you can skip without starting to feel like, you know, maybe you need to give some people a sense of what happened during this time. Because to me, I think there's a balance between, well, the most important events of the story didn't happen during this time and we can skip it, versus acting. Some stories, especially by authors that feel like they have to work at a really fast pace, and especially in TV and movies, because, like, the number one thing executives will tell them is like, we have to have a faster pace. People are going to get bored. Is like, they cut too much of the interim stuff. Like, they cut too much of the slice of life sort of hallway moments between the important bits. And sometimes people's favorite parts of the story are actually the in-between stuff between the most important parts. So I struggle with not wanting the readers to feel like I took away the breathing room of those in-between moments, or showing some things that maybe are less important to the story but are still kind of emotionally valuable.
Yeah, I remember having that. Like, I remember having that when I was writing The Fulton Fulch Manufacturing. There's this scene where, and I don't know why it was super specific, but there's a scene where Seamus has just found out that the ministry has fallen, like there's been a coup and Voldemort has taken over the ministry. And he tells his sister, who is obviously a very important character in the series, in the story. And I struggled with that scene because I love the sort of casual sibling interaction that is in that scene. But at the same time, and it's also very Irish, like she's coming back from a night out and she's having this like what Irish people call a crisp sandwich, which is basically like two bits of bread and crisp and butter and crisps in the middle, which is a very like hungover.
Don't they call that a chip, buddy, in England?
I don't know, but that's in Ireland, it's a crisp sandwich, and it's like, and it's a very kind of hungover sort of thing.
So this is Joe from the future. I've googled it and no, it's not the same thing. So what I was talking about is a crisp sandwich, which for Americans would be two slices of bread and chips inside, so crisps or chips. What Lani is talking about is a chip buddy, which is two slices of bread and chips, which is French fries. So the one that Lani was talking about is with French fries, and the one that I was talking about is with crisps or chips. Truly riveting information. But back to the episode.
And so I really wanted that scene, but at the same time, the information that he gives her is something that the reader already knows, because, and it's not really doing anything for character either, and it's something that the reader already knows because the scene before we've seen him find out. And so I was kind of like, oh, do I delete it? Do I keep it? Do I delete it? And I ended up keeping it because I was like, I want this slice of life before the chaos of the war. But it's one of those, like, it's a very specific example, but I think it's one of those things where you are lucky with fun fiction that you get to keep these if you really want to, because there's no one looking over your shoulder forcing you to take it out. And I think that's where I love fan fiction, is that you can just be like, yeah, I'm gonna keep this, and you know, if it is too long, then you know, whatever, because I think it's important to me and I'm the writer and I'm in control of this. So I think that's one of the advantages that we get from fan fiction, you know?
Yeah, and I would say also that, like, when it comes to the Harry Potter books, all of my favorite moments are not the major or most important scenes. They're all these, like, in-between little moments, because I feel like the best kind of character development happens in between. Like, I think I've talked about this before, but one of my favorite moments in Deathly Hallows that I think, honestly, I think I might be the only one that remembers this, to the point that I don't think J.K. Rowling remembers that she wrote this. Like, I think I'm the only person who remembers this, is somewhere in, like, maybe the second chapter, Harry goes to his door and doesn't look, opens the door and steps out and steps on a cold cup of tea and, like, breaks the saucer and cuts his foot, and he's very irritable. And his reaction is very, like, I know they put that cup of tea there just to trip me up, just to make my life a little bit more miserable. And I was reading it going like, no, I actually think they put that cup of tea there to be nice, to like leave you a cup of tea, and you just like hermit crabbed yourself in your room for so long that it went cold. Like, I actually, but what I like it is that it tells you something. Firstly, I think it's character development of the Dursleys. I think it's implied that Dudley left it there. I can't remember that well, but I think it's character development of them that, like, oh, they actually did try to do something nice for him. But it's also character development of Harry, because you see he's in, like, a mental headspace where he's, like, doing that teenager thing of perceiving everything in the world as being a personal attack. Yeah. Even when you are, like, I think that actually wasn't a personal attack. And, like, that's That's one of my favorite sort of character moments, and it's like clearly not meant to be the most important part of even that chapter, and I would hate to deprive readers of those types of moments.
Yeah. I think for me, the sort of challenges that I've encountered when developing like stuff that is especially like non-linear narratives and stuff, I think there's two things. When I was writing my first fic, Children, which as I said was chronological, but it was happening on two separate timelines, I think the challenge that I was having is what we were talking about earlier, which is kind of like giving enough info to for people to be curious, but not too much for them to, you know, be bored and already understand everything, like to kind of maintain a little bit of suspense. I think with Castles, and I've spoken about this on Tumblr, is because it's not chronological, and it's kind of like, okay, well, if chronology isn't what binds this story together, what does? And I think when you let go of chronology in order to tell a story, it kind of opens up this world of possibilities of, okay, but what order am I putting these scenes in? Because if I'm not putting them in a chronological order, then am I putting the most important first? How am I transitioning out? Like, and what's my structure? Like, just my chapter structure. And I think it's something that I struggle with. Like, it's one of the reasons that the chapters take me so long to write, and that, like, one of the challenges that I have regularly is just figuring out. You would not believe how many times I put, like, I take something, put it earlier, and then no, earlier it doesn't work, so I put it later, and like going back and forth like that for like ages and ages and ages, because since I'm not bound by chronology,
there's too many choices.
Yeah, there's too many options basically. And so yeah, I think that's probably one of the main challenges that I see, and something that is kind of fun, but it's also fun to do and deal with, and it's a nice challenge, but it's definitely challenging. Okay, I think this was an interesting conversation. We're gonna wrap up now. Do you have any recommendations for us this week?
I've been, you know what? I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna say I'm very excited to listen to the Tortured Poets Department. I don't know what it's going to be, so can I recommend it? I don't know. It could be the best one so far, although probably not, because that was Evermore. Or it could be the worst one so far, but probably also not. But I guess we'll find out.
I love that for you. I feel like is she back in like her Tumblr era? What is that title? Like, Torture?
You know what? Honestly, I was shocked, because normally she does these like one word titles, or at most two word. So her coming out with a massive multi-syllabic phrase, I was like, what is going on here? Honestly, though, we won't know until Friday. Like, we're just not going to know. And my students are not going to know information on Friday, because they're not going to learn anything.
But like, I've looked at the tracks, like the titles of the tracks, and it looks so erratic. Like, does she always do this?
I don't know.
It looks erratic to me. It looks like someone posting on Tumblr to me.
Honestly, like, every time you look at a Taylor Swift track list before you've listened to the album, you think you know which song you're gonna like and which song you're not gonna like. But like, honestly, no, you don't. Not until you hear the songs. So, I mean, okay. Obviously, like, generally speaking, I think a title should have fewer words, not more words. So the ones that appeal to me the most are the ones that only have one or two words in them. That being said, like, I don't know. So she always pulls something out that is not what you thought it was going to be. So,
okay. Well, I hope you and all the other people in the world who are not me enjoy. I am going to recommend... Do you know what? I could recommend this. I thought it was very interesting. I read a book called Bad Blood about the Elizabeth Holmes Theranos scandal. It's the book by the writer who broke it. And it's very interesting. It was given to me by a friend for my birthday last year, and I just got to it now. And it's really good. I had a lot of... Like, it was super interesting reading it, and I'm listening to the podcast right now, which is more about the trial because the book came out before the trial. But yeah, I am like absolutely fascinated by this story and this woman, so I would highly recommend.
I listened to a whole podcast episode about her fake voice. Like her fake voice. It was, they were like, let's not even talk about the blood scandal. Like let's talk about the voice, how it started, and like what it would have been like when she decided she wanted to give it up, because she did give up the fake deep voice.
Yeah.
But I guess it was like once her whole life was revealed to be a lie, it seemed like not worth holding on to.
Yeah, it's just very interesting. Like this whole thing is just fascinating. And I think it says a lot, like as someone who works in tech, the guy who wrote it, John Carreiro, makes a lot of interesting points about how what she did is basically what a lot of tech entrepreneurs do, but they do it in a, like in a setting that doesn't really, like that doesn't really have an impact on people's lives. Like it's just people bullshitting about a software that doesn't exist yet or something like that, whereas she did it, like she took it too far because she took it to an industry that wasn't meant to be like this, and that's healthcare. So I think it's like absolutely fascinating, and I would highly recommend. Okay, Lani, this was fun. Where can we find you online?
I'm still at copper-dust on AO3 and Tumblr.
And I am Pebbly Send on AO3 and Tumblr. You can find the podcast if you have any feedback, suggestions, or topics for next episode. Our ask box is open. You can find us at thefanficwriterscraft.tumblr.com. And if you want to help finance the podcast, you can find us at ko-fi.com/thefanficwriterscraft. We use your donations to pay for hosting fees. Thanks, Lani.
Thank you. See you next time.
Bye, everyone.